Hi, everyone. This is Gary Barkalow again, and we have another Campfire Conversation. And we are coming back to Kevin Miller, who we've had on a while back. But we all discovered as we were talking to Kevin that we had just started to mine the gold that is in Kevin's life and is in his experience and in his story. And so I asked Kevin if he would come on again, and he did. And so thankful, and I know you guys are, and as you all know out there, that Kevin is a member of Base Camp and a trail guide for us. So, Kevin, thanks for coming back on with us again.
Hey, as always, it's an honor. And gold, yeah, that's kind of heady to say that there's gold in me. You know what I will accept is that I mine a lot. So
good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going with that Jonathan Swift quote that I use all the time where he says, you know, it is in a man as it is in the soil that often there is a vein of gold that the owner knows not of. And I think that's just true for all of us. So, but I've seen the gold in your life. I know it's there. So
thank you.
Yep.
Likewise.
Yep. So, hey, you know, here's what I thought. I have a number of questions I'd like to ask you, and yet we'll just kind of watch where would be the best direction to go. But I wanted to start with this. Kevin, to the best of your ability at this point in your life, because I know for each one of us, God reveals more and clarifies more and brings more out of the realm of mystery into the realm of clarity for us. But to the best of your ability, describe what you believe your calling is, your effect, your passion, your cause. Just all meaning the same thing.
I'll say it, and you know, I play with that terminology a lot, even in my own mission statement and business and everything. But in just true, flat out layman's terms, the thing that I can't help but do with people in relationships is to pick and mine, as you started off with, to see what it is that inspires them, what it is that brings them, you know, makes them come alive, makes the lights go on, gets their fires going, figure out what that is, and then I naturally want to figure out how to get them doing that in their work, not because I am just a work-focused guy at all. If you put me in a social situation with couples, I'm more likely to be over with the women talking about babies and relationship and stuff as opposed to, you know, work and sports and everything. But being that work takes up a majority of the best of our hours in a day, best of our energy usually, I see the effects of people working, taking that time, not being inspired, not having their heart turned on. And it just burdens me, and that's one of the things I have no idea why. Why is that the thing that God put on me? You know, one of my best friends, Dr. Randy James, his is regarding, you know, health and wellness. That's it. It's not a work focus. It's health and wellness. And he has a very similar heart to mine, but, man, what burdens him is health and wellness. Now, I care about that too, but mine is in the workplace because I just see that happen. I grew up with a dad who was always working at what really inspired him, what really intrigued him, and I loved that out of him and knew that if, you know, saw the brief times I saw him flounder a little bit, he was a different guy that I didn't enjoy as much. I didn't get as much out of. And I see so many guys especially, and I'll see them, you know, in the evening or on the weekend engaged in something that inspires them and see them be different than I witness them to be at see them suffering when they spend the majority of the time, again, with that switch flipped off for their heart. And then I, you know, you let that go over time, and I couldn't tell you how many times lately I keep hearing the word, you know, depression, numbness, despair, frustration from guys. It builds up. You can't stay in neutral, especially if you found your heart. You're almost better off to not find your heart. If you're not going to engage in it full time, don't even find it, because then it's worse.
Right, right. That is so true. I mean, I tell guys when I'm speaking that the warning label on this idea of allowing your heart to come alive and allow God to awaken, deepen, and fulfill the desires on your heart so you can read what's been written on your heart about your calling is that if you open your heart up, you're going to feel the full gamut, not just the joy and the excitement and the dreams, the anticipation. You're going to feel the heartbreak, the disappointment, the fear. And I just find most guys really will opt to just turn it off at that point. They don't want to live with it both, so they'd rather live with none, which is why a person becomes completely lost at that point in life.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, yeah, again, that's what, I don't know why it is that that's what flips my, you know, my switch. It's what I would do for free. It's what I can't help but do. So, of course, I turn that into my own vocation. I think it is a responsibility. I still fight that to find, when I do find somebody, you know, you once interviewed myself and John Dale. And, you know, he's a guy that I see a lot. We live close by. And he's an, you know, he's an inspired guy. He's excited most of the time. He's doing things that he loves to do. And it's seeing guys like that and seeing guys like you fully engaged and paying your bills in that. And I look at that as that's a responsibility, because for you, there are some personal convictions, you know, just like my buddy, you know, Randy James, he's got his, and so this long list of people that I know that have these convictions they've gone after and made it their vocation so that they can be fully engaged. I think that's their responsibility. Yet as a culture, we look at that and say, well, that's a luxury. And I think my experience is it's even worse with Christian guys. They are much more liable to take on the mantle of just providing for the family, even if work is hell, just to, you know, they're going to pay the bills, do the right thing. And, you know, you do have to pay the bills. I mean, I honor that. And I honor guys who will do whatever it takes in that sense for a season. But to commit your life to that and not be pursuing what it is, you know, not to be pursuing what you do to help find the calling and then how to engage in that full on, I think is, I'm just not okay with that. How's that?
Right. Well, that's really good. And I think part of it comes from the idea that it's, first of all, if the idea is it's all up to me and work, providing for my family feels overwhelming, then yeah, I'm going to camp on that one, because I'm going to think, how could I ever think something else could happen in the midst of doing this? As opposed to, no, God's in this and he's providing a way for me to provide for my family now, but he has more for my life and more through my life than present. So, yeah, that's what I want to dig in with a person, is find out, why do they believe that this is all there is? They will never get out of just being the responsible husband or, you know, or mother or father or wife, that that God isn't capable of doing more. So, yeah.
Well, and that word provision, you know, we, again, as a culture and even in a church, provision is providing monetarily. And, man, when I look at who I'm to be as a husband, father, friend, disciple, you know, follower of Christ, I think, you know, providing, you know, and providing to those dependent on me, my kids. I've got 7 kids, and to provide for them financially is just one piece of it. If I shut down my heart, as John Hart, I see the question he posted in the chat, if I shut down my heart, there are other areas of provision that I am just not capable of providing. Because, and again, I see that with everybody that you know, is in my audience and a lot of my members who come to us, they are not able to – well, like you, I could see them going to one of your retreats, Gary, get their heart turned on, come into some clarity of what their calling is, and then to spend, again, the better parts of their days, hours, energy with their heart shut off in a job that's just for a paycheck. When they try to revive that heart in the evenings, on the days off, on the weekends, you know, during a 2-week vacation, whatever, it's just not possible. So we kind of just numb out and, you know, flip the TV on. And I have understanding and compassion for that, but that's what I'm trying to hit. I also think, Gary, and I would be curious to get your input on this. And hey, Jonathan Poole, I see you just came online. Awesome. Is that I feel like maybe I'm weaker. It's so easy to build somebody in a leadership position as stronger, but sometimes I honest to God, not, this isn't just some false or some shot at humility or something, but I sometimes wonder, maybe I'm just weaker because I'm less tolerant. If I go for long feeling aimless, pointless, purposeless, meaningless, doing something that doesn't inspire me, I just can't hardly stand it, and I think I'm not as strong as those guys who are able to go out and put in the full day and do what they need to do to bring home money, even though it's killing their hearts or has no purpose. I don't know that I'm capable. And that's driven me to pursue opportunities in what my heart does care about.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And let me go back, and I just was looking up actually John's verse that he put in with the question, Jeremiah 29. And it's a fascinating verse. It says, "Sometimes I say to myself, I will forget about the Lord. I will not speak anymore in his name. But then his message becomes like a burning fire inside of me, deep within my bones. I get tired of trying to hold it inside of me, and finally I cannot hold it in." Okay, that's powerful, John. I was so glad you brought that up. And I mean, that's just a great point. I do think, as you were saying, Kevin, that people get close to their heart. They start to enter into that arena, and they love what they start to discover. But then I think because of misconceptions about timing, misconceptions about how God leads and how he speaks and the world they live in, I think many people get really disappointed. And so what they do is they walk away from what they did know about their heart, that introduction. And so then they just try to shut it back down. But I love that verse, John Hart, that you gave, because I think what happens is now they're aware there's something in their heart and it's burning, and after a while they just can't turn this off. They have to return back to it. Or perhaps, you know, dig themselves deeper into the cave. So I was talking to some guys when I was in Wisconsin last weekend, and they were talking about the experience they had of guys coming to their retreat, and they have a remarkable experience with their heart and with God and with other men at that retreat. And then, you know, they say, "I'm coming back next time. I'm bringing people with me. This is life-changing. I'll never be the same." And then 8 months later, they're just like, "Oh, it was good, but, you know, that was then." And I really think what happens is I think that when we enter back into the regular world, you look back at some of these experiences with your heart, and what happens is you feel like, well, that was just weird. Maybe that was just an environment, and my heart was manipulated into these passions and things. Instead of going, "No, that was real, and I have to fight for that." It's just that whole internal heart battle that you're talking about, you know, and the guy that now settles for a job that I hate, but at least is providing a living for my kids. And let me throw out one other thing. You know this, Kevin, too, but and all you guys that have been in an intensive out there or a facilitated one, I have never heard a guy say that he was wounded because they grew up so poor. I've always heard guys say, "I had no idea we were poor. I know it now, but I didn't know it then. But what wounded me was my father was absent, or my father was angry, or my father didn't care," or, you know, on it goes. And so the provision thing, right, when it comes to finances, that is way low in the value system. Or
impact. Oh, man, let me hit that real quick, the aspect of, you know, the father and what's hit me responsibility-wise with my kids and, you know, and my spouse and everybody. But I've got a guy right now who's a personal client. Most of my people, you know, come in and join Free Agent Academy, our online school, and come to events. Every once in a while, I'll take on a personal client where they pay me a, you know, healthy sum, but I walk personally through the process with them. So I have a guy that did this with me. Good guy. He's almost my age. Pretty confident guy, doing well at work and everything. That guy, his father, you know, no big feelings. I mean, he's a good guy, he felt like, but the guy put in 30 years at General Motors, I think it was, 30 years at the factory, did his stuff. And so this, of course, my guy, Brandon, never saw really any inspiration, purpose, anything. That is his biggest battle. I mean, we are just churning, trying to find a heartbeat, literally. I mean, he knows it. He feels like there should be more meaning to life, but he just can't tap into it. He has no experience with it. He grew up in the, you know, school system and conforming, and with a dad that was doing the same thing. And I look and think, man, my kids need to see the pursuit of what I feel God's called me to, the pursuit of my convictions and the desires of my heart, as Gary Barkalow so well talks about as a responsibility. They need to see me doing that. That's more important than whether I keep everything safe and secure. I had somebody ask me during a class or a show this week, about my experience with my dad, who was an entrepreneur, always doing something, you know, or for a long time doing something different. And I said, you know, I am so grateful that I got to be a part of his failures, because I saw him work through it. I saw him rely on God. I saw him and my mom rely on each other. I saw his abundance even in the midst of that. My kids, again, so it comes back to what you were talking about earlier, you know, in that struggle and fight to pursue your heart, your calling, what you feel God's put on there, to have faith in it, one, and then also then to realize, okay, I'm going to go have to battle the culture, because the culture is not going to support me here. Neither are my friends and family by far and large, because what is applauded is to be safe and secure and comfortable. When was the last time we all went to watch a movie about some guy who stayed safe and secure and comfortable? Give me a break. There's no story. There's no story there. And if that's a story I show my kids, what kind of legacy am I leading them? So I need to pursue God's calling in that there are going to be risks, which is what our Bible is full of, story after story after story. It's not about being safe, secure, and comfortable. Now, again, it's not a cop-out to not provide for your family financially, but, again, just a piece.
Right. Right. Hey, we've got Sam online now, unmuted, and he wanted to ask you a question. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Sam.
I have a question for you. Hey, Kevin. I have a question for you, and that is, what do you say to a guy who's competent in a job? So, you know, he may be trained as a CPA or he trained as a doctor, so he's competent in his job, but he's not passionate.
Oh, I don't find a whole lot of merit. Great question. I don't find a whole lot of merit in that, because there's a lot of things that we can look at and say, what are you good at? I personally am really good at retail marketing. Go figure. Retail marketing. Give me a brick and mortar store in a local area, and I do. I just have such a knack, you'd call it a talent, for marketing and driving business in there and customer service, the whole deal. My heart could give a rip. So put those together. I can't define why that is. What my heart cares about is this, what I'm doing here now, which is not the best business model. I don't have the best business revenue model. It's not the most scalable thing to be intimate with a big group of people and try to walk with them. But I have to struggle to find a revenue model that supports my family in what my heart, I feel like God has, again, given me a conviction for. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, it absolutely does make sense. So let's say that you're talking to somebody who is a CPA or a medical doctor. Their heart is not in it. What do you say to them to transition into something that they're passionate about?
Oh, start doing the work. I mean, my gosh, we've got Jonathan Poole here on the line, you know, with us. We really lead up to our first course, you know, and this isn't a plug for Free Agent Academy, but it is how I've tried to address that question, is to come in tune with who you are. So if their heart's not in it, we got to find out where their heart is and, you know, have them get in touch with their calling. And that's what I turn to Gary Barkalow for, then to understand, you know, strengths and weaknesses, personality style, and then get into Jonathan's course and really get in tune with your background and try to come up with the context of who you are to see what does flip your switch, turn the lights on. And a lot of times people are aware of that, and we're just trying to hone in and refine that and then see, okay, what is the marketplace opportunity? And so generally we're doing that on the side. And if we have to adjust their current work to make some margin for that, or they just have to sacrifice some personal things, you know, to start pursuing that, pursue it on the side. Let's start putting it together. Don't just quit. You know, I'm not an advocate of that. That's what I did. And I have the scars of, you know, to show for doing some rash things without good counsel. But start doing the work just like you would with anything. You know, if you're going to lose 150 pounds, you got to start today, and it's an endurance race. But start doing the work. Go through the steps that we've been trying to put together vocationally here, and get and put the legs on a business. You know, find an opportunity. I mean, it's a long process. It's not the easiest thing, but it's a great question, because we're programmed culturally to go after what are you good at. Let's look at a kid, see what he's good at, and man, we're all good at lots of things that we don't care about.
That's great. That's really great.
Hey, thank you. That's a perfect question.
Okay, so here, yeah, thank you, Stan. That was really good. So here's what I'm going to ask you. Let me tell you what I'm going to ask you in a minute, but let me tell you what I want to ask you first before I get there. So you know where we're going. And so my question to you is this. First of all, what I'm going to ask you after this one is, what do you think, and you started to touch it, what do you think are the most important things for people to encounter, know, discover in their pursuit of living out their calling and to the point where it's also a way of providing for their family so they can put their full attention into it? Now, before we get to those things that you've discovered are really profound, important, let me ask you, what have been the defining moments in your life that both positive and negative that have brought you to where you are in your journey with what you're doing in Free Agent Academy, where you are now? Defining moments.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit that I did grow up very counterculturally. I did have, again, a father who always pursued what inspired him. And he didn't always do it wisely. It didn't always pan out. He made some really bad decisions. You know, I say that. That's not totally true. The one time, the defining moment when I was in my teens, he had always pursued what drove him, what inspired him, what intrigued him. He pursued that, figured out a way to make money at it so that he could provide for our family, not always abundantly, not often abundantly, actually. But I got to be a part of that. It was always family engaged. So family was the focus, and lots of time spent in the living room, you know, stuffing envelopes or doing something for dad's work. The one time, though, that he looked at money above his heart, he bought a health club. And if anybody knows my dad, that would be like me buying a CPA firm, and I can't even add. It was the dumbest thing. I mean, the guy had never, you know, he didn't work out, not an athlete, an exercise, whatever. It's not him. He bought that thing, absolutely lost his shirt, lost everything. Should have declared bankruptcy, according to most people, but he didn't. So, again, I got to see him and just in integrity and leaning on God and others to get through that time. And then he went back and pursued his heart. So that real defining lifestyle for me and some things there. And so I knew nothing different than to go pursue my heart. So I was a professional cyclist, and then I went into, you know, marketing things. But I always came back to leading people. Even in cycling, we had a huge organization, and I realized that I was just using that as a tool to have influence with people to get them to pursue the things that were important in their lives. I was doing that, you know, a decade or 15 years ago even. But defining moments where, again, I then also did actually what – just the question that Sam had, I did the same stupid thing my dad did, and I went after some opportunities in areas that I was good at, which was marketing, and went after some opportunities in some business stuff, kind of back with the dot-com rush, and ultimately lost my shirt. Long story, lost my shirt. Tried to go it alone out of my own arrogance and pride, and lost my butt and wrecked my finances. And it wasn't an all of a sudden thing. It was a long process of being stupid, and came to the end of the rope in my marriage because my wife said she loved me, but she was just done. She lost hope. Everything was in such chaos. Our finances were on the crapper. And that was a defining moment because we stopped everything, literally quit everything, and went and I got, in essence, a job. I was still an independent contractor, but got a job doing some marketing stuff that I knew how to do well while I started to get some wisdom under me by leaning on other people and pressing into the Lord and really pursuing what did inspire me and what did not. And I remember even coming to the point where I thought I had hit the big time. I was doing personal branding consulting, which I thought that's it, because I really love to take somebody who has a great message, like you, a Gary Barkalow, a guy who's got such a gift inside of him, but maybe his business isn't flourishing, and I want to come alongside and help him, you know, express that message better. And that in the business world, branding and your image is really a big part of that, and that your marketing comes from that. And I built up to where I started it. In reality, it was about $60 an hour, but real quick, I got it to $300 an hour, and I was thinking, man, this is really great. And then I realized, I don't really, this doesn't do it for me to walk hand in hand, one on one, day to day. I really like talking to groups and inspiring groups. And I started to realize that, one, and then I also realized it just spent, you know, trading time for money. I didn't know a whole lot of happy, high paid lawyers. And so I thought that's not, I don't know if that's a model I want to pursue. But again, just getting further and further in line with my heart and seeing what inspired me and giving a credence to that, which is something that, you know, you are again, you know, trying to get people to give weight to the desires that God puts on your heart. Same thing with Jonathan Poole, who's listening right here, where he says, you know, what is it that where you lose time, that gives you energy? That's not just a nice thing. That's a responsibility. That's all important. And just paying attention to that is what led me here to where I am today, to where, yeah, I found something that I would do for free. I'm not able to for free yet, but I sure as heck would. Does that answer the question as far as some of the turning points? I mean, I could give you 100, but
well, you know, it does. I'm struck by first of all that you, because your dad pursued what he loved and what he was curious about, that had a big impact on you. And I think it's really easy to think, oh, you know, when a dad does that, it's so self-centered. I mean, he's thinking about himself and his own happiness and not his family and his kids. Well, I mean, one, we know the truth is that if your heart is dead, all you can do is give death out to others. And so, one, you do need to do those things that make your heart come alive. Secondly, what you're supposed to offer the world is written on your heart in the form of your desires, so it's larger than you. But thirdly, what struck me about that is the impact that had on you as you watched him pursue what he loved and curious about, as you said it.
Oh, man, as a father, Gary, just that, you got it, man. As a father, I look at that and I think, what would have been the worst thing if he had not done that and not had the failures amongst it, and instead would have just done something that paid the bills with his heart turned off and him away from the home? Oh, my gosh, it's one of the biggest gifts that I got, what he did, even though most people would say it wasn't wise because there were so many failures along with it.
Right, right. Well, and again, as you said, even the failure in his life, and I remember hearing him sharing this when I was up at one of your intensives, and even that failure that he went through was of benefit to you to watch. One, how did he make that mistake? What did he maybe misinterpret? And then secondly, that he came back out of it again. You know, it wasn't the end of the world for him. In fact, he learned from it. So that's remarkable as a dad to hear that and go, you know what, if I would just live honestly in front of my family, honestly with them, with my heart and with God, then they're really going to benefit from that. I think that's just huge. I really do.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
let me ask you, Kevin.
Go ahead.
You go ahead. Finish your thought.
Again, when I look, I don't want to downplay providing for our families financially, because I did that poorly. I didn't give that enough value, and I really hurt my family, especially my wife specifically. However, again, we got to, you know, that's why there's often not the black and white we would like. It's in the tension where we find the truth, and the tension is that we do have to provide for our family financially, but if that's all we do, and that's what the world is going to applaud above anything, we're not going to find any support in the world for the most part, except right here on this call with you, to go pursue the responsibility to pursue, again, purpose and meaning and God, what God's convicted you in. And if you do that, then the absolute promise that we can have for you is that you're going to endure hardship. And you're not going to knock it out of the park. It's not going to be easy sailing. It's not going to be smooth and calm water. So, you know, make your pick.
Okay, so let me ask you, Jack Lindy on here, he made a comment a little bit earlier up on the chat line, but I want to throw this out to you. He said, I'm a chiropractor. I'm competent but not on fire for it. I love the relational aspect with my patients, but the clinical side just doesn't inspire me. What are your thoughts with that comment of Jack's?
Well, it's not to just ditch it at all, which was, you know, kind of the question we covered earlier. I don't think that for sure. I mean, could it be at the end of the road that you do something totally different? Maybe. Or can you reframe what you're doing and put the focus on where your heart is and use it as a platform? Again, I'm what I'm doing today is not dramatically different than 15 years ago, or it wasn't that long ago, it was only a decade ago since I left it, that we had this big cycling organization. We had a big club, about 100 folks, and then a big elite team that went around the country, and then I grew an audience out of that in the thousands that I got to speak to and write to and influence, bottom line. And I realized, oh my gosh, what influence that I have here in having a successful organization. The influence that I get to have is dramatic. Now, was it what I said at that time, that cycling's my calling? No way, man. It was just a blast. I just loved gunning for the line myself, and it was something that I did well, and it was a lot of fun, and I integrated my family in it. I saw from a long-term standpoint, I enjoy having influence and inspiring people in that sense. Now I do it in something that I really do enjoy. But yeah, so for you, Jack, I don't know. Is there a place within that? Because we're all going to have stuff in our work that we don't enjoy. And I can list out the stuff that I do even today in Free Agent Academy that I don't enjoy. I mean, little by little, I'm trying to get other people who are more competent in those areas and willing and happy to do them to do them, so I don't have to. But maybe you are. You could very well be where you're supposed to be, providing healing to people, and you just need to morph your business. It may look a lot different than the chiropractor next door because you have a different purpose at hand. He's there to fix backs, and you're there to fix hearts. And how your business runs as a result of that is dramatically different. That's my buddy that I keep talking about, Randy James, up here. He just opened a new practice because he knows that 90%, or he believes 90% of the people sitting in front of him, his patients, should not be. And it burdens his heart. And it's a result of the lifestyle choices and ignorance that they have. And he wants them to be healed so they don't have to come back to him. That's his heart. So to do that, he had to have his own practice to run it his own way. And he's figuring out how to do that today. So in that, you could be right where you're supposed to be. Now, if it's, you know, to a degree where it's you're not fully able to pursue your heart in there, then, you know, you've got to judge that, kind of do your pros and cons list in a sense, and see, and then be honest with the results as to whether or not it is a fit, if it can culminate your calling within that platform or not.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? I agree. And we have a close family friend, Misty French, here, that she's been with us for years, and she does the Captivating Retreats with Lee, just as a responder, and kind of really helps everything stay on task and all. She's great, but she is a phenomenal physical therapist. In fact, continually down here in the Springs, different physical therapy practices are keep trying to hire her and pull her out from where she is to work with them because she's so good. Anyway, what dawns on me, and knowing her fairly well, she is a physical therapist and she is a spiritual therapist. I mean, first of all, how she, with her understanding of the human body, its makeup, its structure, everything about it, it's amazing what she could do for somebody in a short amount of time that no one else could do. Secondly, she is just like that when it comes to spiritually. You know, she kind of looks at the condition of the heart and she can tell what's out, what's pulled, what's not working right. And like Jack, you know, she gets so sometimes tired of the number of clients she has to have, but particularly the paperwork she has to do with her work. It's by law and with the corporation. But, you know, she is fighting hard to bring her therapy ability, both spiritually and physically, but she's always fighting the same tension that you talked about in the beginning that we live in, you know. Hey, I want to do you see the note that Kevin Miles wrote on there?
About publishing?
Yeah. I mean, this is really interesting, right? He said, I hated my job working for a publisher, and now after stepping away from a corporate publisher and now accidentally falling into my own publishing company, I'm loving publishing. Well, what an amazing thing to start somewhere. Find out how much you dislike it, how life-taking it is and heart-deadening. Go away for a while, and now you can come back because you're a different man, and you do it differently. I mean, now he's got his own publishing company. I think that's a pretty remarkable story. You probably run into that, Kevin, a similar type of a story.
Well, yeah, and of course it's hard not to hit my bias in there, which is self-employment, which, you know, is that the holy grail? And I've gotten hit by people where they felt like I was judgmental against everybody who was a traditional employee, because, you know, are there people in traditional employment who are able to pursue their calling and their vocation fully and it's a great situation? Absolutely. By far and large, I don't see that ability. Most people in a traditional employment scenario, they have limits on how they're able to express their hearts and pursue their hearts in it. And at the end, you know, if you've got a business that you don't own, you know, you're there to make them money, and that they can't afford to have your interest, your primary interest at as a priority. They've got to have the business. So in Kevin's scenario here, unless I'm reading that wrong, it sounds like, you know, now he's got his own thing. And that is why I'm an advocate of self-employment. I see people most, like, best case scenario to pursue their heart fully and engage it fully in their work, I think happens in self-employment when you get to call the shots. I mean, I'm not saying it's all rosy and perfect, but to me, that's not the point. Again, the point's not safety, security, comfort. The point is pursuing what we feel God's put on our hearts. I mean, heck, you know, God's convicted my wife and me, just for us, for homeschooling. Neither of us enjoy homeschooling our kids. Not at all, really. We just have the conviction for the lifestyle and some of the pieces of it, but we do not enjoy it. And in some ways, we feel like, oh, can we just send them to school? And again, this isn't a judgment on public school. It's not a debate on public school or homeschooling, but it's just, we just happen to believe that's what God's put on our hearts. And so, okay, we're doing it. I like some of the payoffs, but overall it's work that we don't really, enjoy doing. And I think that that's, again, we can either go for safety, security, and comfort, or go for what we feel called to.
Right. Right. Hey, Sam, you have another question. Why don't you go ahead and ask that?
Well, my question was going to be, what do you think about self-employment? You answered that question before I asked it. So I guess my question would be, what is it about self-employment that you think helps a man find his heart and his desires? What is it about doing it yourself, especially, that you help brings that out?
Oh, man, how can I be short on that, because it is really, self-employment is my platform vocationally. Oh, if I can just try to hit the high points real briefly, it's that, you know, in my work, for instance, it's my responsibility to seek God's will for my work, for the people that I have influence with, for my members, and I want the ability to do what I feel God's called me to do. And if that's to ditch what is on tap for me to do today because I have somebody in need, I can do that. If it's to give away my product or service, I can do that. If it's to fire somebody who I think is detrimental, I don't mean just an employee. I don't have any employees, but, you know, somebody that's part of my, list of independent contractors that help me. I don't even mean them, though. I mean my members. If I need to get somebody out of the group because they're detrimental, I get to do that. If I want to do something financially that I feel like God's put on our heart to give, even from a business standpoint, I can do that. And so I don't know, my experiences with people in traditional employment, and I did have 2 years in traditional employment. I can't imagine a better scenario, but even there I realized I can't fully go after it in how I feel called to. And it wasn't just about doing my own thing. It was, oh, my heart wants to do this and I can't. I don't run this thing. So, you know, that's a big part of it. Go ahead.
So let me interrupt you a minute. I mean, we know that there's a set of people who are entrepreneurial just in spirit. But it sounds to me like you're saying, I know that you're not saying it's for everybody, but let's say you're talking to someone who doesn't feel very entrepreneurial. They don't feel like an entrepreneur. What would you say to them about how to move into this, why it's so good, even if they're not an entrepreneur?
Oh, yeah. I know Jonathan's laughing right now because I see him in the chat. Get ready for a sermon. First, let me make an admission. Anybody
I'm just teeing it up
Dave,
for you.
Thank you. Let me then make an admission. And, you know, Dave Ramsey, most people know him. He's, you know, the financial guy and get out of debt and, you know, credit cards are the devil. And I don't disagree with that, though I know a lot of businessmen who get irritated because they have used, you know, business debt to make millions of dollars, and they use credit cards responsibly, and, you know, they look at Dave as Dave's, you know, way over, he's way over there, you know, and he is, he's way off there. But if he can bring people halfway, great. In the same sense, I'm probably a little bit too biased towards self-employment. Because I honestly
go ahead
think,
and be biased. Go ahead and be biased.
Okay, here you want my bias.
My
bias is that before the Industrial Revolution and manufacturing and the assembly line, most people, regardless of their personality style, were self-employed. You know, we were a bunch of farmers and people that had a trade that we could offer, and that wasn't that long ago. So for the main span of time, it was people who, you know, they were responsible for them, for providing for themselves and providing whatever product or service they could to people, but they were self-employed. Then we hit the Industrial Revolution. It's really been since then that we have become this world of employeedom, where we have given the reins over to a small minority of people to be the bosses, and the rest of us work for them. That's still a new thing, and I see today, here's the thing that I see. Most people that you hear of who are entrepreneurs are people like me who happen to be a personality style, and the reason you hear from us is because we're mouthier than the rest. The people who are of a different personality style, who are successfully self-employed, you just don't hear about them because they're not so mouthy and they don't care to tell everybody about it. I have a good friend here in Woodland Park who owns a small mountain, and he's a tech guy. He's an IT guy. You'll never hear about him. You can find him, up here. Don Brady is his name. And that guy makes more money than should be allowed. And he's a tech guy. He has his own, you know, a few core clients that he provides a special service to. He still does a lot of stuff for Apple. And he's an entrepreneur. That was his conviction in order to lead his family and do what he wanted to do with them. And if you put us together, it would be like the Odd Couple. I mean, you'd say that guy, there's no way that guy, he's not a risk taker and he's not, you know, he doesn't have an entrepreneurial spirit. I think that there's a myth with that because, again, the people that you're going to read about in Inc. magazine and Fast Company and Entrepreneur magazine are generally the people that are looking for the limelight in some sense, myself included. I got plenty of ego in what I do, and I've made a platform out of that. There are so many people self-employed that would not fit the mold of that. And here's my other little soapbox. I think that those people, some of the people who are less averse to risk and some of the chaos that I embody, if we can get them to seek counsel, put together a good plan, and get them in business, they'll ultimately be far better. They'll run a business far better than me. And so I have a heart to find some of those people who would culturally not be labeled as having the entrepreneurial spirit or the skills for it. I want to get those people running businesses because they do a heck of a better job than the people of the same cloth as myself. Does that make sense?
I love what you're saying. I love it. Now, let me ask you one more question. Sorry, I don't mean to take this whole thing up, Gary. But one
That's
last
all right.
Question.
Someday I'll try hosting one of these calls. But I'm just going to keep going. I'll learn from this. Go ahead.
Yeah. Jeez. How do you help a guy take risk? Risk is scary. So what do you say to people who are saying, I'm not an entrepreneur, I'm not this, I don't know how to do this? How do we get moved from the safe, comfortable, stodgy, drudgery life moved into risk and adventure?
Well, I think anything that we go at, kind of that, you know, not to be cliche, the no pain, no gain type thing. I think if we look at what we feel convicted to do, what's going to bring our hearts to the Lord in alignment in our vocation, there's going to be some risk. And so whether we like it or not, you know, tough. So I can say that. And I do believe that. Now, I also, in my business and what I do, I want to help people calculate that risk and have less of it. Get counsel. Again, most self-employed people go it alone, and they're either ashamed to share with people because, you know, they know they're doing something countercultural, or they're arrogant, or, you know, whatever it is. They don't want to ask for help. but they try to go it alone. I'm trying to help people not go it alone. Here's some steps to do this wisely so there's not as much risk. So I want to lessen the risk, you know, for sure, you know, and have people do this on the side as much as they can and build it up to where, you know, it's, I love the problem of somebody who started a business on the side and now it's gotten to the point where they feel like, oh my gosh, I've got two jobs. But when they're making, you know, even a couple grand a month with a side business, it's a heck of a lot easier to make the leap to get rid of the other job so they can put more time on this and increase the revenue than it is, you know, to go from, you know, ditch the job when they're at ground zero with a business. So I really want to help with that, you know, with that risk immensely. But, you know, again, ultimately, I think that we are in a culture and even in the church where the focus is to minimize and eliminate risk. And I think that's the disease that has hurt a lot of us. And then you've got a guy like me who was just Mr. Risk Taker who really gives it a bad name, and neither are good. Again, it's in that balance in between.
But isn't it true that doing nothing is a bigger risk than doing something?
Amen, brother. Preach it. Somebody posted that in a chat during a show I did or a class I did yesterday. They said, yeah, we so often look at this thing we feel called to and we right away look at the risk and start counting the cost. And we don't do exactly as you said. Brilliant statement. We don't look at what are the risks of staying where I am now. So that's my favorite question with people is not, hey, where do you see yourself, you know, 5 years down the road? Where would you like to see yourself? It's 5 years down the road, are you going to be okay being exactly where you're at today? And most people will say, no, I'll be dead by then, or I'll be in the insane asylum, or I'll be so depressed and dead to my heart.
The biggest risk you're taking is doing nothing.
I think you should leave the rest of this call because you're
doing
No, Gary, mute me.
No,
I'm serious. It's brilliant.
Mute me.
Yes.
My finger's right over the mute button. It's not a problem. No, great. That's a great question.
I love it.
It's a great point. It really is. Okay, so let me ask you in light of this conversation. What was your journey like from wasn't it your last job before Free Agent Academy? Was that working with your dad or was that something else? What was your last job before Free Agent?
It was. I was doing marketing consulting. So I had a big cycling company out in California that was a client. I was an independent contractor. And then, yeah, my dad, and if those of you who don't know him, if you know Dave Ramsey, you've probably heard of my dad, Dan Miller. He wrote the book 48 Days to the Work You Love and No More Mondays, and he's got a real flourishing business. And he was doing some things that fed right into what I was, you know, really good at, competent in marketing wise. So I was working with him as a client too, and that grew. And through some of that time, I started doing my personal consulting with individuals and with small businesses, and started expanding that base. And then found my joy just in leading people in business, and then really further in self-employment specifically from that. And also realized that, you know, my dad and I are. We don't play well together in all ways, so we kind of separated in that sense. But, yeah, that's what I was doing. It was a lot of marketing and business consulting before what I'm doing here. And this is, you know, it's still a big piece of what we do. I mean, ultimately, if I'm staying with Free Agent Academy, that it's the self-employment lifestyle is the key. You got to have a successful self-employed business, so we got to do a lot of business. But my goal through it is the lifestyle and the heart. And, you know, lifestyle design is a terminology that I like a lot.
Okay. So what I'd love for you to do, we just have a little bit of time left. I'd love for you to give us a behind-the-curtain look at what this process over the years has been like when you decided you're really going to develop what you now have. Now, obviously, in the beginning, you didn't have what you have now. It's been developing, but just kind of tell us what has it been like to develop what you have today. What did you have to do? What were the things that were hard? What were the things you learned? What was it like? Just kind of give us a behind the curtain view.
Oh, Lordy, that's okay,
let me tell you why I'm asking this, because it's really easy for any of us to have a dream of something. If we do understand what it is that we would love to do, what gives us energy, what so powerfully works in us, what we're compelled to do, all those, you know, different kind of phrases. Sometimes we just think, because we see someone else's life, it appears to us it just happened fairly easily. It would help us to understand, what was this like for you, or for you, or you, whoever, to what was the journey like? So that's what I'm asking. That's why I'm asking.
Okay. Well, you know what? A great example, and just to lead into that, and I talk about you with this, Gary, a lot when we talk about stepping back and looking at your life. I use you, and you probably don't even know it, as an analogy, because it sticks out that you so often hear from you, and you're going away for a day or 2 days or whatever, just by yourself to seek the Lord, look through your journals, press into the scripture, and that is rare. That is so stinking rare. And I look at that as an analogy of not to take anything away from your brilliance, Gary, but I often say I see people who have achieved the level of success in areas that other people want, and it's not that they're so brilliant. They weren't lucky. There wasn't some divine, you know, lightning bolt of provision necessarily. They just flat did the things that other people don't do, like you getting away and recentering, recalibrating yourself. Most people don't do that. I wish they would. They would probably have some of the things they see in you that they desire. So in that same way, what did I do? Man, I just worked my butt off. When I realized that this was where my heart was, I was doing some things with my dad, and I cut it off. It was hard on our relationship. It was really scary financially because I had more than half my salary or my income coming from the work I was doing with him. And I remember the phone call. I was with him and another guy that we're aligned with, and I said, I just got to – this isn't good for our relationship, and it's killing my heart. I'm gone. If we can work something out, that'd be great, but I've just got to stop it for the sake of my family, myself, for you guys, for everything. I remember that. It was really scary, and I don't know how many people would have supported me in that, because it had a direct impact on my income, my financial, you know, provision, and that's what people tend to look at. So we did that. And so we started working through that. So I'm just trying. I had no savings during this time, so there was nothing there. No savings, no margin in my income at all, zero. We had also just worse than that. Worse to make matters worse, in some ways, we had just bought land that I don't know that we should have at the time. I mean, I think God's hand was in this, but again, there's so much chaos. We had bought land, started building a house, and realized right away that here I am trying to build this business all of a sudden that I got clarity on, and we're trying to build a house. We're going backwards. I was doing the general contracting, and we had to look at it. My wife and I did. I remember again when it was. It was in January a few years ago, and we said, this is not going to work. We're going to go bankrupt right away unless we do something different. And I had never – the one thing I'd always kept – held on to was I'm never sacrificing family, never sacrificing family time, no matter what. And I believe in that overall, but for seasons, I think we need to look, you know, I was also killing my family financially. And in this season, we finally said, okay, we're going to change things. I moved out into a fifth wheel and stayed on the land to build this house. And I did that for 4 to 5 days a week where I did not see my family. This is 3 years ago. 9 months. Now, at the end of that 9 months, we had a house. We all moved out here. And from that point on, I've been full-time dad. And, you know, there was light at the end of the tunnel. So giving up some family time for too long, and you're going to lose your family. But for a window of time, they can rebound. And I was able to provide something through God's grace that's been a huge benefit to my family and even my business. We do stuff out here, you know, even with the business now. In the midst of that, about 3 months into the building, into that 9 months, my wife got pregnant again. That would have been baby number six, I think, that we did not intend. That was through birth control and the whole deal. And I didn't sleep much. I didn't exercise much. Of course, I was helping build the house. It was chaos. If it wasn't for some friends coming out and encouraging me, I think I would have gone under. My wife was with me. I did a better job of being in union with her than I ever had. That helped a lot. But I also just worked my nads off. and there was no free time, there was no entertainment time, there was no downtime, there was no saying, oh my gosh, I deserve a break today. It just wasn't, or things were going to crash. My wife says that that period of time was the best thing that's ever happened to me, because it made me do the work, come through. There was a deadline, she said that was one of the most shaping things in my life. So there was no great provision, there was no great brilliance. It was just stinking hard work and just accepting, yeah, the risks and meeting them head on, praying like mad, relying on other people like I had never done in my life out of my pride. I had to. I mean, it was great, and it was hard. You know, again, I look at, and I'm sure as heck not Moses, but I spent more time reading Genesis and Exodus than I can imagine. That was if I wasn't working, I was reading that, because I was looking. Okay, God told Moses to do this. Moses didn't even want to. He told him to do it. He went out and did it, and led him right to the Red Sea. What the heck is with that? That makes no logical sense. I cannot accept that through anything but faith, because there it is. And I had to look at that and go, gee, why do I think that if God calls me to something, it's just going to pan out? And that's just what my church bred me to think. And it's just not the truth. So, Kevin, pray, press in, seek wisdom, ask for help, and get off your butt and do the work. And the results of that have been a payoff that I only wish I could express enough to people. It's profound. So does that answer the question?
Yeah. You know what hits me about that is I think one of the misconceptions, as you said, you kind of heard a kind of false truth through your church. I think one of the misconceptions is that if God is in it, it will be easy, relatively easy, and it will succeed or build or grow quickly. And that is just so untrue. I think your story is a great example where God says, I put this on your heart, now I'm with you, now you're going to have to work hard. You're an adult son now with me, so work hard, you know, and that's where we find God, that's where we find what our true strength is, that's where we find where God comes through. But man, I just think we give up on things because it seems hard, and it's like, this is going to take too much work. Well, what do you want exactly here, you know? So I think that kills a lot of people, is that idea that
That thing of again, you know, looking at Moses, and I think we think, okay, we're going to go after this big thing, but God will provide manna. And so as soon as it starts to get hard, we start saying, okay, God, time for manna. And it doesn't come, and then we start to question whether this was this really a God, or was it just a bad burrito I ate. And I think we've got to look back, and he didn't just let manna fall out of the sky. He first allowed them, for whatever reason, to come to the point of going, holy crap, are you freaking kidding? We have no food. God. And they turned from him. I mean, it freaked. He allowed that to happen, and they had to come and seek him before he provided that. And so we go out here, and you know, he's going to – I don't have the theology all figured out, but I just know that even in the things that I've seen the biggest blessings in, and he's let us come to things that have been insurmountable, that we've been brought to tears, brought to our knees. And, you know, he has we're here today. He has provided, seldom in the ways that my logic thought he should, but he did. We're here. And the things that he gave us the vision for, and that's a great analogy to me, is my, you know, the land that we live on, the house that we decided to build here. We're here. It's shaping my children's lives. They saw the heartache. They saw the triumph. They're seeing the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. And God's been true, but it has been hard. It has. And it's going to continue to be, because we're coming more and more to grips with, you know, the point. Again, my mantra is not comfort, security, it's safety. It's not. Now, it is peace, and that's where my struggle is. You were asking me right before the call where I am right now, and I am. I'm seeking more peace in understanding God's will and resting in that, even during the hard times, to have, you know, have peace. And I should, because he's shown me that he's trustworthy. It's just seldom going to be a path that makes sense to me, and his provision doesn't come around. You know, he may provide manna, and I swear that I think it should be smoked salmon, and it's not. But I'm eating.
yeah, that's really good. Well, and I can say to everyone listening that because of the involvement that you've allowed me to have with those who have joined Free Agent Academy, those are some remarkable people, and I attribute two things to that. One, they're the type of people that you attract into Free Agent Academy. I mean, there are probably other things out there to help people develop their own business, but there's something about you, and it comes through your public website with Free Agent Underground, and of course just an experience in Free Agent Academy and the other things that you do, that attracts a certain type of person. And then second thing is you are so honest with your life, and you really are caring, and I'm just amazed at the amount of energy and involvement that you give, and having all the children you do, and everything else that's going on in your life. It's pretty remarkable the way you live, that I see the fruit of that when I am in conversation with Free Agent Academy people, either online through chatting or the discussions, or when I'm on the phone. And I see the fruit of your life and your effort and your passion, your heart, your walk with God through Free Agent Academy, and it's remarkable. It really is. Okay, I'm going to ask you one more thing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
one more thing, and that is this. As we end this, so what would you say are two or three or four, I'll give you five at the most, but it doesn't have to be five, of the most profound, core, passionate beliefs of yours when it comes to helping a person walk in their calling, and I mean in the broad sense of the term. They bring what they have been created to bring to the world, but in the same time, they're loving their family well, they're loving friends well, they're living well. And again, you may bring up something you already said in the call that wouldn't surprise me in the least, but and it would probably be a lot of fun to ask those in Free Agent Academy what they would say, how they would answer that question for you. But for now, how would you answer that?
Well, Jonathan Poole's in here. He's been a part of Free Agent Academy longer than or as long as anybody. So, Jonathan, if you got any wisdom in there, yeah, shoot it into the chat room. But, you know, it's obviously, you know, cliche, but it's just the truth of pressing into the Lord and pressing into Scripture and believing it and realizing it is illogical. I think that's the thing that I have to come to. It is illogical. It's a paradox, and I so much want the black and white. That is a part of my nature, and yet I see His truth in the tension because it makes us work for it, and it makes us call on Him, and that is a constant mantra that I have to tell myself because I wake up every morning looking for the black and white because it's easier just to know what to do and not have to stop and rely on God's direction. So that's one thing. The absolute biggest thing for me in that is not relying on me. And that is, again, my other number one sin and fallback of my nature is to rely on me. And you're saying rely on God, yeah, absolutely. But again, biblically, when I look at the truth in there, He generally works through other people. I mean, He could have wiped everybody out, but instead He found one guy and said, "I want you to build a boat." It's never rained or anything, but you know, build a boat. Here's how to do it. And why did He go through all that crap and effort? He could have just wiped out. He uses people. And so when I look at that and realize I've got to open myself up for counsel and accountability, which in some ways, when we're talking self-employment, most people are thinking, hey, I'm going to be self-employed, so I don't have to answer to anybody. Again, it's not a black and white. Yeah, I want to run my own ship in a sense, but I can't run a ship without a lot of people to help and a lot of counsel. And I've got to put it out there and seek counsel and manufacture accountability. I have accountability now. I have a business that I own 100%. I can't spend a penny, not one solitary penny, without four people knowing about it. Four people get, I mean, they know, I mean, I can't do it. My wife, my partner, my assistant. Oh, actually that's three people, isn't it? Three people. I guess I'm the fourth. So three people. I mean, it's accountability that I put in there. I don't have to have. So relying on other people. Absolutely. From a business standpoint, a work standpoint, we always end up focusing on money and the lack of success in, you know, in the workplace in general, but especially in self-employment, comes from people who don't know themselves. That's why I have Jonathan Poole in there, to help people understand you. I mean, you're the start, and then it culminates, and it goes through you, and then our second course with Devin Gino, and then Jonathan. It's those three courses, and that's to know who they are before we can get to an idea that we even know is relevant, that we have our idea filter that Jonathan creates. It's the culmination of you three. And that's then when we start putting the legs on the business. So it's know yourself. And as you know, being in business for yourself right now, even after you have, you know, pseudo succeeded, you're paying your bills and maybe there's abundance in there, your continued growth is not primarily business strategy. It's personal development. The business strategy has to be there, but the things that sabotage our growth or sabotage the business overall are personal development. It's a personal roadblock. I mean, it always comes back to that. I mean, we see that over and over and over again. So I've learned to put the majority of the focus there instead of just on business development, because I kept seeing where it broke down. That, I guess, the one other thing that I would add in there is being in union with your spouse. And that's, again, something I violated so much. I'm a persuader. And I got her, you know, I felt betrayed a lot when things would come out from her where she wasn't in support, because, you know, all I knew was that she said yes. And I was stupid enough to take that yes at face value. And she had given me that because she knew it's what I wanted, and I was persuasive. And that wasn't true union. Being in union with my wife has taken her from saying at the beginning of 2003 that I'm done to today, 2011, she is my absolute number one, not just biggest supporter, but even when my faith falters, she comes back and shows me a mirror of what's happened and where we're at. And she says, she did this yesterday. She says, honey, I have no worries. I have no fear in this. You're doing the right thing. That's life-changing.
Well, and I do have to say, Kevin, I love the way you love your wife publicly. I mean, it's in Fragen Academy, it's in your blogs, it's in your Facebook, it's everywhere where you have a showing. There you are talking about how much you love your wife. There's a picture of you guys going out to dinner. There you saying, I can't wait to be with my wife tonight. We're going to see a movie, and I'm just going to, you know, be staring at her the whole time. I mean, you just go, and it's just so good. I love the way you are passionate in so many areas, and yet in a focused way. I don't mean in too many areas, but it's really good.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I have so many more things I would love to throw out. I'd love to do this again. It's 6:10. We've gone an hour and 10 minutes, so I'm starting to violate my own rule here on this one. Thank you. Thank you for this. I have absolutely loved it, and I can tell the guys have been from the questions they've been asking and the things that they've been saying on here. So, Kevin, thank you. Thank you for your presence with us in Basecamp, because, you know, it's a place where we all need each other, and we're wanting to grow together, and you're a big part of that.
Hey, it's just, thank you. Thanks for sitting here and letting me talk about what inspires me and what my heart is, and just a gift. Goodness, it's just thank you for helping put gas on my own fire and letting me share here. And guys, thank you for the questions in the chat room. Are so great, so deep. I sat here and wrote notes. That verse, Jeremiah 29. I'm going to use that. I'll use that in a blog. It's just powerful. And John Hart, I just saw your testimony there. What a gift. Thank you. It's just flat out I wish I could give it better words, but it's just an honor, and so blessed. I feel like, again, there's few things I'll take credit for. I'll take credit for I don't even know if I can take credit. I'm just grateful that I have a guy like you who will invest in me and what I'm doing, like you have, and taking a personal interest, because it not what you know, it's who you know, it's who you surround yourself with. And that has been, that's probably one of my other things I would have added into that. What your last question is, surrounding myself with people who inspire me and who support me, encourage me, push me, hold me accountable. It's just, I wish that for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much.
You're welcome. So guys, thank you. This has been a really good call, and it's been good to be back with you all again. It's when Sam and I went off this last weekend and did the calling retreat in Wisconsin. It was a great experience. But I'll tell you what, I end up, you know, I leave on a Thursday to have a day of travel that if anything happens, I'm still going to be there for Friday. And so between preparing and then leaving early and then being wiped out for a couple of days, I feel like I haven't been around base camp for a month. So this has been fun to be on the phone with you, Kevin, and be together like this. So thank you, everyone. And we will continue to be together, walk together, see together, and do together. So thank you, everyone. See ya.
Good night.